Hi, this is Suzanne with Mad Scientist Exposed. And they changed the a little bit of the dashboard back here, so I apologize for the minute delay there. The topic this week, from my perspective, is when the state becomes predator, because we've had some sorry experiences this week with some predatory doctors. And it's certainly not as serious as happened. You can read a lot of really, really bad cases on medicalkidnapping.com. That's where they, you bring a child to the hospital and maybe you disagree with the doctor's advice or you want to get a second opinion. And as happens in the Justina Pelletier case back in Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they took custody of the child away from the parents and were treating her improperly, and they darn near killed her. And that kind of thing goes on in all over the country. That it's a very sad website to read, medicalimpact.com. I'm sorry, not medical, medicalkidnapping.com. And there's just case after case of horror stories like this, of families fighting to get their kids back because the doctor's possession of the child legally and are actually harming the child's health. And a lot of that is tied to drug trials. If a child has some obscure genetic disorder that they want to try a new drug on, even if you're, keeping them alive as best you can, and this new drug might not do so well for them, that child is very valuable as a test subject. And it goes on and on. Well, our experience, and I'm sorry to say it was my daughter's experience more than it was my own, about, I guess, not quite a year and a half ago, she and her dad got a letter from the state from the county, that it was time to update their very geriatric border collie with the rabies vaccine. And I've been reading a lot of horror stories about, people dying younger with vaccines. They just, develop these random ailments that you wouldn't think would come from something like that. And it's always a bit of a time delay as the thing does its damage. And so most people don't make the connection. Well, before he had the shot, I was doing all this reading, and I was asking her dad, please, what can you do to avoid this, the shot for the dog? Because he doesn't mingle with the general population of dogs. He doesn't mingle it with the natural coyote population or the wolf population. He just had a little walled backyard that he was living out his geriatric years in. And, he would, pace up and down the yard or scamper up and down the yard and bark at the birds, because that's border collies like to herd things, and he was telling the birds where to go. And sometimes they listened, sometimes they wouldn't. But, he was just being a dog. And he tried to get asked the vet for a medical exemption for the dog based on his age, because he was an elderly dog. And he said, I'm sorry, but, the state of Arizona doesn't offer medical exemptions for animals, or for pets, or for dogs. So he let him do the rabies vaccine. Well, a couple of months later, the dog starts with seizures. And he'd never had a seizure before in his life. So we know darn well where it came from. And you can find some of this stuff in the rabies documentation. But, in all truthfulness, the dog had gotten lazy in his habits, and because he was older, people were being accommodating, spoiling the dog. And he reached a point where he didn't want dog food anymore. He just wanted dog biscuits. And, once we traced it down, if you read the side of that brand of dog biscuits, which is Milk-Bone, it has all kinds of minerals. Oh, they're bragging about all these minerals. There's 24 minerals listed on that box, but no magnesium, not a molecule of magnesium in those dog biscuits. And so one of the symptoms of magnesium deficiency is seizures. So, but it's also listed in the vaccine package insert for the rabies vaccine. I think he got the 3-year one. I forget the exact name of that. One, they have a 1-year and a 3-year and whatever. And so my daughter started giving him, they corrected his diet. They started giving him the magnesium supplements and stuff. And their first encounter with the vet with those seizures. You know, he started with the seizures, and they took him in, and the vet immediately threw like five really powerful drugs at this geriatric dog. And, you know, you can't even do that at elderly people. You throw a lot of drugs at them, and some of them will overreact to the drugs. You know, elderly people are hypersensitive, a lot of them, to various pharmaceuticals, and you can do more damage than good. So anyway, that's what she did to the dog, and she completely incapacitated him. I mean, he had come out of the seizure, and he walked in under his own power with normal digestive system and all that stuff, but these drugs, which, you know, the phenobarbital, of course, for the epilepsy, and prednisone, because she decided he needed anti-inflammatory, whatever, and an anti-pain medicine that was really overpowering, and, oh, something else I forget. I don't remember what all it was, but absolutely knocked the dog on his keister. He, that was in the evening when he went in, you know, to get checked out for having had seizures, and by morning he was completely paralyzed on the floor. Well, I mean, he was too weak to get up. He couldn't even lift his head. And so that vet that day badgered my daughter and her father. My daughter's an adult, but, you know, absolutely badgered them for 45 minutes to put the dog down, put the dog down, put the dog down. He's not going to get any better than this. No, 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 no. And my daughter said, look, he walked in here under his own power, and you did this to him. You undo it. You get him off, undo it. You know, obviously, you know, you can't just undo the seizures, but everything else, you know, he was not in pain when he came in here or anything like that. So you undo it, and the vet refused. So they took him home with this bag full of prescriptions, this huge, you know, number of prescriptions, and, you know, several of them were like, you have to follow the protocol to get off the drug or you can die. And I know that's true for prednisone. You have to follow a certain protocol for prednisone. If you just go cold turkey, you can die. And so you have to follow the protocol for weaning off. And one of the other drugs caused some other intestinal ailment where he started, she had already induced, diarrhea. I'm sorry, but that's what it was with the dog. This dog is flat on his back. He cannot stand up with diarrhea. So, you know, they shaved his butt, totally robbed him of his dignity, and they were changing these chuck pads under the dog and, you know, trying to get him to recover. And by morning, he was also bleeding, you know, with the diarrhea. And so then the vet backed off, said, okay, I'll give you a protocol for getting off the other drugs, but he has to have the phenobarbital, which they understood for the seizures. So, they went through this whole process of weaning off, and it took probably a week for that dog to be able to stand up again. And you could tell the spirit was in the dog. He didn't like, you know, people cleaning him. He didn't like this. You know, he was grumpy, and he just lay there, and he was so sad. And then one day you reach to tend him somehow, and he just, all of a sudden, he was across the floor. And so he scooted up off the blanket he was on, and he just, you know, plaps on the other side of the floor, but, you know, we're like, wow, he moved, yay! You know, he just wants to be a dog, you know, so, you know, gradually, you know, he got to where he could get up and take himself out to the backyard and do his business and bark at the dog, bark at the birds and all that, and he was never his young self, which you don't expect for, you know, for a geriatric dog, and he was always on the phenobarbital for the seizures, you know, but she kept him up on his magnesium, and she would take him for walks, and she had him up to like 3 miles a day, you know, on the walks, and they were doing wonderful. And then, the heat got overwhelming in Arizona, so they had to do it at night or early mornings or whatever. And then my daughter had an injury and couldn't take him out for a few months either, so he kind of relapsed because other family members were occupied with other things and couldn't take him on the lengths of the walks that she was taking him on. But, you know, as sometimes you see with older people, if somebody's like sick, they'll get better and get worse and get better and get worse. And the general trend is kind of downhill. And that's kind of what he was doing. Better, worse, you know, he'd go 3 weeks with no seizure at all. And then he'd have a seizure and he would be very tired again. He'd have to sleep it off for a day or two. His legs would get tangled when he tried to get up. So he had to like help him get up. And, through the end, it got to where he couldn't get up at all. Even with a struggle, he couldn't do it. And he would just lay there when it was time to get up and go outside. you know, he'd bark and somebody would pick him up and he would walk outside and do his business and then fall down out there and you'd stand him up and he'd walk back in the house and whatever. So, but he wasn't in pain. He loved to just sit by your feet while you're watching a movie or whatever and, you know, pet, you know, he just was happy to be with people. Because he couldn't run and chase the birds anymore, you could tell he was a little depressed about it, but he was still happy to be with you, and he would still make the effort to go out. He wanted to go out. He just wanted to be a dog, and, you know, dogs don't look into the future kind of thing, and so he wasn't thinking, I mean, you could cheer him up. He was a dog that you could cheer up, just to pay him some attention, and he's happy and all that. And then a couple weeks ago, he had a really bad seizure, and the vet had always said to my daughter, look, if he has a really bad seizure and he won't come out of it, bring him in. We have these extra powerful drugs. We can get him out of it. Well, now we wonder what they meant, because this did eventually come to that, where he had a really bad seizure, and they brought him in, and by then, you know, my daughter had been giving him something called CS oil that she got from a pet health food store. And I think it's related to CBD oil and cannabis oil. You know, it's the same plant family or something. But, it, you know, her father was in law enforcement. He didn't want anything to do with any kind of cannabis or hemp in the house. Even though hemp oil is so legal, you can order it off of Amazon and deliver in all 50 states. But he didn't want anything even related to that. So they got something called CS oil, which we don't even know what was in it, but mitigate his seizures through the last few months. They weren't as many, and then they weren't as bad, and, you know, except for this last one. And so they brought in the dog, and they threw some really powerful drugs on him, and he couldn't stop the seizures. So my daughter's like, well, you're not having any luck. Let me try this CS oil on him. And she got it into his mouth, and within a half an hour, he was out of the seizure. But by then, he was so tired, he just wanted to lay there and sleep. And that, as is his pattern after seizures. And so once he came out of the seizure and, you know, went to sleep to rest up, you know, my daughter's like, okay, well, take him home. I'll take care of him. And no, you have to put him down. And she's like, what? We're not going to put him down. So they argued all night. All night, that stinking vet badgered her to put the dog down, and she's like, he's not in pain. I just let him die in peace at home, you know. No, he's not in pain. Nope, you have to put him down. And so, you know, her father is like, well, you know, let's just take him out against medical advice. You know, what paperwork do I need to sign to take him out against medical advice and just let him die peacefully at home? And they slipped in the paperwork, oh, well, if you take him home against medical advice, then we get to call Animal Protective Services to come out there to your house and check on the dog and make sure that you're not being cruel to him. And, you know, of course, they refuse to sign that. They're not going to sign something like that. They agree to send Animal Protective Services out there. And you're being cruel to this animal by letting him live. Well, you know, if he's not in pain, is it crueler to take what few hours he's got left away from him? So, anyway, they got so desperate to put this dog down. They just had blood on their mind that they threatened to call Animal Protective Services out to the vet's office and accuse my daughter and her father of animal cruelty for not putting him down. Now, I don't know how you accuse somebody of animal cruelty for refusing to kill their dog. It just is beyond the pale. It's just beyond the pale. And because he works in the court systems and all that stuff, they terrified her father into, yes, he finally agreed to do it. And this, you know, my adult daughter had been the one, the primary care of this dog, and they were quite bonded, and they just ripped him this way away from her and didn't let him have his last few hours, you know, with her petting his head. They were screaming at her in one room while another one of them went around to the back room and put him out. And it was just a horrible, horrible thing. And my daughter is traumatized, and I don't. Where do you go for trauma counseling for this when it's the somebody wielding the power of the state to just kill your dog? I mean, where do you go for something like that? You know, they don't counsel for that I know of. So anyway, I don't know. We have had experiences in the family where a pet was suffering, and we did agree, and you know, to to put them down because the point was to end the suffering. You know, an animal that was in pain. This animal wasn't in pain. He didn't like the seizures, but you know, then he would sleep and then he would wake up and he'd be happy to have you pet him. So he had good moments and bad moments. Whereas, you know, some of our cats and things, they were suffering and we just had to make that decision. So I'm not saying that ending animal suffering is a bad thing, but when there's a bond between an animal and a person, that it's an unspoken thing, obviously, because the dog can't speak, but, you know, for the state to step in and say, no, you can't have that bond anymore, even though the dog is not in pain, you know, the worst he was suffering was some confusion. He'd come out of the seizure, he'd be kind of confused, and he'd want to sleep it off, and then he would get better over the next few days. And so anyway, this was just beyond the pale, and we're pretty angry about it. You know, we do have some nice follow-up on that. They did send a condolence card. That's not what I mean. But I mean, there's another industry that completely understands the human-pet bond that has came up after that. So anyway, let me, I think it's time I need to take a break here. I've been chewing your ear. And so if you'd like to get in on the conversation, the phone number here is 347-324-3704. 347-324-3704. And if you'd like to, you know, and you can listen to the show and not speak on air, but if you'd like to join the conversation, dial that number and then press 1. So anyway, I'll be back in a minute.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Really, I don't want to jump in. Okay,
you're an activist.
You know?
You have a cause and an idea. But you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to?
Maybe it's
the Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
delusion. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution radio show from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our calling number is 347-324-3704. Listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Hi, so I'd like to lighten up the subject a little bit, as light as this could be. We did find another glowing light in this saga, and that was something I'd never heard of before in my life, and that is the pet cemetery industry, which I didn't know existed. I don't know if we've always, we've had a lot of cats that died of old age. We've had dogs that died of old age. And, you can either just say, okay, just cremate the body, whatever. Or you can have the body cremated and returned to you. And when our last dog died, they told us that, oh, no, you can't take the body home. So they only returned the ashes to us. But we had a cat die at home at that time. And my brother and my father had built a little coffin for him, and we had built him out on the property on the back part of the acre, and so when the ashes came home for that dog, we just buried him next to the cat with his collar and leash, and that's how we did it. And and a lot of people, I guess they do that if they have a bit of property, they can bury the dog's ashes at home, or if the animal dies at home, I guess you can bury it at home. And it now there's a new thing. I don't know how new it is, but in Tucson, where all this happened, there is a pet cemetery. It's called Pet Cemetery of Tucson. And, rather than bury your pet on the property that you might eventually sell someday, you can pick out a little plot. You can get a little headstone if you want it, or, it's actually quite beautifully done, and they will even have a little ceremony. So I had never heard of a funeral for a dog, but it's all about comforting the people left behind. So whether it's a person or an animal, it made sense, because my daughter and sons needed some closure with this horrendous episode that happened, and her father was willing to go through with that too. He'd never seen anything like this before either, but he found it and he called them up, and it sounded like a good process to them. And so they went, and they don't have a showroom of coffins like a lot of the funeral services have, places. You go in and you pick out the model you want, how fancy, how much gold trim, or how much carved wood, or how plain you want it. They had, it was basically sizes. You could pick for a chihuahua, a cat, or dog, and they were plastic. But they were nice quality. They were pretty. They had little inlays or engravings of wheat shafts on the top. The old thing about it, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground, it can't sprout up, and all this. And it was it was dignified, but it wasn't a people thing. But it was dignified. And then they had a little service where, this person that steps in, in place where clergy would be, they were talking about the dedicated love of an animal. It's pure, unquestioning, unjudgmental, non-judgmental love that a pet has for its people, its family. And, it was just, looking how to, They give us their lives, showing us, you know, how to look at the world in a different way. You know, you go for a walk and you notice things that the dog is noticing, you know, the smells and the bushes and the, you know, animals that, you know, the other pets that you go by. Just, you know, it gives you an opportunity to slow down and just live in the now. Anyway, it was lovely. You know, we had the little, you know, they had the little plot, and I don't know if they were going to get the headstone for it, but, you know, once the grave was covered over, you know, my daughter and her father came back a few days later, and she hung little wind chimes on a little hanger over it. And, you know, it's very nice. And there's little things like that around the cemetery where people just honor their pets because they are family to people. So anyway, it looks like somebody would like to join the conversation. Hello?
Hello.
You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, thank you. It's Ed.
Hi.
I've called several times now, and, you know, I want to give you and your daughter as much sympathy as I can for what you both went through with the experience with the veterinarian. But you know what? I'm kind of a friend of the family, and I was very glad to come along, you know, to the services at the pet cemetery. And I thought that created or it brought back a sense of the value of the pet, the value of it as a being, as a friend, as someone that was vital, you know, to the family, all that was stolen by the veterinarian. The veterinarians, as you said, I wasn't there, but I did hear the stories and how they badgered both, you know, your daughter and her father into, you know, putting the dog down. And it's such a horrible thing. But if there's anything that could have turned things around a little bit to the positive side, to the good side, it was the services and the treatment and the setting and everything at that lovely pet cemetery, you know? They gave us little candles, you know, little candles that we could hold, and a certain part of the ceremony, they lit the candles. And the... I don't know if it was not the mortician, I don't know if she was some kind of very spiritual person, because, you know, she talked so much about life, the spirit, the life hereafter, the fact that we might see pets again in the future. It was not really, I would not call it really a Christian service, but it had all the elements of religion. You know, it could have been, you know, a Catholic, a Presbyterian, a Jew, anybody would have been happy at that service.
It would have
service,
been proper,
you know?
even for Christians. I mean, animals don't need baptism for a reason. They don't have, you know, a malicious intent. There's no tendency towards doing evil that you have to guard against your whole life. They don't need baptism. Now, you know, I don't know how other...
They're not fallen, right?
They're not fallen. No,
they're not fallen. So, you know, unless there's a bad dog, I mean, I guess they're like a Cujo or something. Well, even Cujo, well, he would have suffered from rabies, you know, and that's not evil.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
evil pets or something.
That's an ailment. Yeah. And, you know, of course, animals in the wild have to hunt, but they have to eat. They have to eat, but it's not about lying. I don't think an animal can lie to you, not without being completely, you know, sometimes just an animal will, I don't know, my mom tells a story about they had a little dog that wanted to come in the house. It was a little, maybe it was a, you know, fall weather or whatever. And if you peeked out the window, if the dog saw you looking, it would shiver and shiver. Let me in. But if you peeked the dog without the dog seeing you, it wasn't shivering. That's about as far as a dog could go for bending the truth. You know?
Oh, wow.
And maybe he was just trying to communicate he was cold, and the only way to do that was to shiver on purpose when you're looking at him. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the most part of the dog.
They're
not looking to set you up. They're not looking to steal from you. They're just being animals, and, you know. And so it was very nice. And there was there's another website online called petloss.com, and I think it's based in Europe somewhere. I'm not sure where it's based, but it's been there since, like, the Internet started since, like, 1997 or something. They give the history on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they have a live chat every Monday where they have like a similar type of thing where people remember their pets. And so people get on there and they talk to each other about their pets and, you know, the recent losses and on all this, or they'll just send little chat notices up to the sky. But then at some point they stop the posting and the owner of the site comes on and he essentially goes through the chat step by step by step, offering condolences, much like this person at the funeral did, you know, expressing how they bring unconditional love and they, you know, they're only with us for a short time, you know, and then they read the Rainbow Bridge poem, which I guess anybody can Google up, but you know, and I hadn't really heard of the Rainbow Bridge poem, you know, with years and years ago when I was a kid, but I guess it's kind of a new thing, you know, pets, when they pass on, they go over the Rainbow Bridge to the other side. And so, you know, there are ways that people consult each other that understand the loss of a pet and this thing. And you know, my big thing with this whole event was, you know, yes, the dog maybe only had a few hours left and he would have passed on his own. And that was just, he was pretty sick by then, but that they demanded it, that they threatened the power of the state, you know, the jackboot on their necks, and it was just beyond anything I could conceive of happening.
What makes them feel that they can be arbiters of life and death and tear a loving pet away from its beloved family, you know? And
well, they're
and he
taught
was conscious
how to
at the time, it would have been terrifying.
Yeah, well, what upset the dog really was all the screaming going on. They could see the dog was upset about it.
Oh, the screaming, yeah.
The yelling, and so, he wanted to protect my daughter, and he couldn't get up and do it. And so that was upsetting him.
Oh,
You know, so that was, you know, it shouldn't have been like that at the end, because she just wanted to take him home and cuddle him. And they were going to stand in the way with stormtroopers. And it was just a horrible thing. Now, sometimes you can't predict this kind of thing coming up, because they really only went to the vet for emergencies, you know, and that one stinking vaccine. But, you know, from the time that he first went in with his first seizure till this time, I don't think he'd ever been back, because, you know, they just didn't trust all the drugs that they throw at the dog would knock him on his keister. And so, you know, she did the best she could for, you know, researching natural dog health and improving his diet and giving him his comfortable, you know, last year of his life. Now, had they had their way, he wouldn't have had that year. It was a little over a year.
Ooh.
You know, they wanted to put him down with the first seizure, and it's like, oh my gosh, we can't do that. He's a member of the family. So anyway, you know, if there's a way to foresee how these things go, if you know, these things aren't accidents. These, you know, I used to give credit, oh, somebody just didn't know, they're just stupid. It's like, but when a pattern develops, then you realize, no, this is somebody that's malicious. This is somebody that has intent to do you harm. And you know, you see a lot of this in the, I mentioned that medical kidnap website before, and the only suggestion I have is to minimize contact with the system, any aspect of the system that you can minimize contact with. Because
let me play the devil's advocate. What if what if your daughter and her father had been maybe friendlier and gone there more often and been regular clients, you know, of this pet hospital, gotten to know the people better or something? Do you think that they would have been treated any more differently? Would it have been, you know, and people were characterizing, you know, your daughter and her dad as being, you know, almost not caring, not being willing to let the dog be put out of his misery, so to speak. It must be because they're exposed to people that are really bad in that way. Maybe they must have had experiences with other people many times who have been even worse about it. In other words, here's a pet that's obviously suffering, and the parent and the person refuses to euthanize him. You know, so maybe this is something that they get into a mindset.
They assigned suffering to him. Whereas my daughter had been watching his pattern through the whole year, he'd have a seizure, he'd sleep it off, and in a day or so he'd be fine. And you know, that was the pattern, and they would not listen to her describe his pattern. And, you know, when they go through their medical school and they're taught how to deal with things, and when it reaches this point, you euthanize the animal. You know, that's as far as our veterinary science can go. That's it. I cannot believe at all that they've ever been even allowed to see a pet die of old age, or, you know, not where the animal's in pain. You don't want the animal in pain, but if the animal's not in pain, you have the option, or you should have the option of letting it pass at home. And that's, you know,
right.
We've had a lot of cats die of old age, and that's, you know, we've had some that, you know, suddenly keeled over of a heart attack and you find them dead. That happened a few times. Or one was a heart attack, one was some thyroid attack, but, you know, stuff like that. But there are other ones that just, they kind of like faded away. And when they were done, they stopped eating. Well, the one that stopped eating, he did end up, at the end, he started suffering, and we did have to bring him in. But, I don't know. I just think there should be the option that he was not what.
No.
I'm repeating myself.
were these the same vets that had seen the dog a year earlier when he started having the seizures?
It was the same institution, but it was a different vet on call that night.
So what I'm thinking is maybe I'm just thinking that maybe there was a file on the dog, you know, and they looked at it and say, okay, so you're telling me he's had seizures for 9 months or a year, whatever it was, and probably there was something there that clicked in the vet's mind that, oh my God, here they've had this elderly dog who's had seizures for almost a year, and no, we're not going to let him go home. We're going to euthanize him right now because he's been going. So they assigned the suffering. They assigned suffering to the dog because the seizures had started to show. They might never have seen a case of an animal that lived that long once they started having seizures.
Yeah, so certainly they had the ability to prescribe phenobarbital. And at one point when they needed to renew the prescription, they wouldn't believe the dog was still living. They thought somebody else wanted to abuse the drug, which is absurd. They said, you have to bring him in and prove to us that he's living. And so... I said to my daughter, don't let him out of the car. You know, it inconveniences him to bring him, to make him walk in there. He was already pretty, you know, he was elderly and just kind of wobbly on his feet at the time. But, you know, make the vet come out to the car and take a look at him. And, okay, it's the same dog, we'll prescribe it. You know, so as I understand it, that's what they did. They drove him to the parking lot. The vet came out and said, okay, I'll renew the prescription. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one thing I didn't know is, and nobody told us, and I had, and it shocks me, because I had had a college roommate who had been on phenobarbital for maybe 6 years by the time I knew her, because she had had a head injury and developed, you know, seizures, and so they, she was on phenobarbital as college roommates, and I never once saw her have a seizure. She did not have a seizure the whole year we lived together, and so, but as far as I know to this day, you know, and that was decades ago, I would presume she's still on. The phenobarbital, I don't know, but because we lost touch, but this dog, apparently phenobarbital has a side effect on dogs of enlarging the liver, which none of us knew. And I, you know, I don't remember that in the package insert, but anyway, so they did do an X-ray on the dog. And his liver wasn't enlarged.
Humans said that too. I wonder if humans
there's a lot of things that enlarge livers. There's a lot of things that can go on that can really mess with your liver that way, but we didn't know that phenobarbital does that to dogs. So, you know, so they were finding, okay, he's suffering because his liver is enlarged too. Like, you know, it's pressing on his diaphragm, so he could still breathe, he just couldn't run because he couldn't get enough breath to run. So that was contributing to his weakness. But, you know, he was old and sedentary.
Let me ask a question. Would your daughter or her father or you, would you be inclined in the future to take your pet, whether it's a dog or cat, to the vet, you know, for almost any reason? I mean, how inclined would you be to return to
there are some naturopathic vets out there, and if there's any way to avoid the vaccines, they will know how to do it, if they can.
You know, I think I must have heard on the radio.
That's a growing field.
Yeah. I must have heard on the radio something about a pet hospital or veterinarians that have a do not put down policy, you know, that we will not euthanize your pet, you know, something like that. I'm not sure about that.
Well,
but I seem to think I've heard that.
I don't know.
Safely bring your pet. Safely bring your pet. We will not kill your pet, you know, behind your back or whatever it seems to have happened.
Behind your back?
Well, one person went into the back room and they did it while she was distracted or something. So
well,
she didn't even get to say goodbye.
Of the dog. Her father was the legal owner of the dog. And they threatened, the authorities to come to the house. And, because he worked in the court system, he would have lost his job. Having any kind of system contact like that.
Really?
And so,
do you think so?
They threatened him. So in order to save his own life, his own job, and the dog was elderly and truly only had a few hours left. But
get to say goodbye? Did she get to go back there and say goodbye?
No, because that's why she's so traumatized.
Yeah.
That's why she's so traumatized. So she's not ready for another pet at this point, but I would expect probably in about 10 years or so, maybe she will be. And this kind of stuff, every experience changes you. And I know naturopathic doctors are a growing thing, and there's even a college here in, I think it's in Tempe, Arizona, that trains naturopathic doctors for people. And, I've seen one myself, and she's, was a very nice lady, and I managed to avoid some invasive tests that I didn't want and go for less invasive tests for the answer to what was going on and everything's fine. But I believe there's also a growing field of naturopathic vet. And, we did hear the story of a friend of hers that had a horse that was sick. And, she was considering having the horse put down, and the vet talked her out of it because, this horse is not that sick. He may be getting along. He may have some health issues, but he's not sick enough to do that too. And so that vet pushed back. And I know that's a naturopathic vet because she gave me his name one time. But I don't know that naturopathic vets have, emergency hours for an animal that has a seizure in the middle of the night kind of thing. There are different schools out there, and my daughter was just shocked at how cold these people were, it's what they do all the time. They reach a limit as to what their medicine can do, and they euthanize the, I don't know. But my daughter will, if she ever gets another pet, she will look down the road and try to foresee the patterns that how to avoid them. Like if she ever has another pet with a seizure, if she's not likely to vaccinate another animal if she can help it, and so it's less likely that she'll have another animal with seizures. So you kind of avoid problems. If you can see far enough ahead, what?
Suzanne, I was just going to say, the trouble started with the insistence of the vet in vaccinating this elderly geriatric dog who really stayed 90% of the time, 95% of the time in the house, maybe went out into the backyard a little bit. No chance of that dog running into any other dogs or any other or feral animals that could have had rabies or anything. So in other words, maybe there's somebody needs to call some legislators. I mean, who makes up these things?
Yeah.
Who makes up these laws about vaccines?
There need to be situations where vets can allow a medical exemption. A geriatric dog that has no contact with any other animal, Yes, he barks at the birds, but he can never caught a bird in all his life, Never did.
In the case of a geriatric dog that's not going to mix with any other animals, then there should be an exemption possible. And I just wonder who in the Arizona legislature could, or in whatever the board is that runs the veterinary system, maybe somebody could do something about that, because the vaccination could hurt the elderly animal, and they might not agree to that. They might say, well, that's a myth, that's a conspiracy
it's
theory.
Such a hot potato now. It used to be common knowledge. It used to be common knowledge that, if somebody's health was fragile, like, geriatric, that you didn't push a vaccine like that, or pregnant women You know, they're really pushing vaccines heavy on pregnant women now. And it used to be common knowledge you don't vaccinate pregnant women. And I guess I've heard, you know, every farmer knows that you don't vaccinate a pregnant animal. And, you know, so that now that it's heated up into such a hot potato, I don't know that we could get any help through in the next year or two for animals. But you know what?
No.
It might be because the whole thing about the vaccine is coming out. There's the movie Vax that's making the rounds around the country that talks about the whistleblower that came out on the CDC. Yes, we did commit fraud in the research on this particular vaccine, and not the rabies vaccine, but another vaccine for babies. The story's coming out, and people are refusing. You know what? There's a few states where they're kind of forced the vaccines. California just passed it like last year, and they're supposed to be all, you know, heavily vaccinated by, I think it's this fall. And so it's just driving the homeschooling movement because
people,
you know, if you're homeschooling, they can't come in and force you. You know, but that is the goal.
Well, they can't come
and force
you. And you know what this? You know what this reminds me of so much is my family has had a background of fleeing communist occupied countries and stuff, you know, and getting out just in the nick of time before the communists took over. But what we're having here, it seems like, you know, with, oh, for the good of the people, for the good of the people, everybody has to be vaccinated. Well, you know what? That's like Joseph Stalin, you know, would have said, or Mao, Chairman Mao, for the good of the people, everybody has to do so-and-so. Everybody's got to carry around a red book with the sayings of Chairman Mao. Everybody's farm is going to be collectivized, and you are no longer growing food for yourself and your family. You're growing food for the community, and we're going to come and take it away and take it to the city, whatever. And those people ended up starving in the tens of millions. And that's what happens when a society gets taken over by I think it, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be communist, but anybody who wants to be such a do-gooder that they take away the ability of the individual to do what he wants, when they take away the freedom of the individual in this kind of way, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you should not have people should not be at public health.
Yeah.
You know, there is public
the
health, but to force everybody. That's why I think where this is corrupt.
Yeah, because the truth
is to force everybody.
They frame it in the terms of do-gooder, but in reality, it's tyrannical evil. But they try to sell it to you by calling it good. And so we have this,
we have this force thing.
But,
I was just thinking for some reason, I don't want to divert too much here, but, you know, is it good that for the sake of maybe 1,000, maybe less than 1,000, maybe it's just a few hundred kids that are a little confused about their sexuality, you know, that all the bathrooms and locker rooms and showers and everything of all the children in the United States are going to be, you know, accessible by anybody who feels like they're
they
one
want to
sex
go
or
in
the other
there.
At a given time, you know.
Well, that
I don't
think
know. This makes me so upset I can hardly even talk about that kind of stupidity. That kind of that's a kind of a government-run thing.
It's intentionally, I don't think it's stupid. I think there is, you see movements in the U.S.
Malicious.
And in Europe now, finally, against globalism. And what globalism is one world tyranny at the top, and a tyranny is. Their tyranny is for money and power, but it's also for sport. It's injuring people for the sake of sport. And so we have, you know, they know, and it's documented at the National Institutes of Health website, they know that the more vaccines you give a baby, the higher its chances are of dying in the first year of life. They know that. They do it for sport anyway, because, you know, when that child dies, he's not going to be taking future vaccines. And so they're actually losing money on the deal, but they impose this anyway. And you know, they sell it to you as, okay, well, it's the odds are really bad, low that it's not going to happen. In fact, we're going to pretend that there's going to be no injury, and we know that there's a small percentage that do become injured and some that do die. And so, okay, so then they try to sell us on herd immunity, and, you know, that you can Google that up, and that's totally disproven, where if you you know, herded high enough, if you vaccinate a high enough percentage of the population, then those last few stragglers that aren't vaccinated, they'll be protected too. When in fact, all the people that are vaccinated are breathing these, you know, if they're recently vaccinated, they're breathing these germs out on them, and you know, they know the whole thing. Disneyland last year, one of the ways of transmitting measles through your system, or you know, being contagious, is it comes out in your urine. And if Disneyland is full of anything, it's garbage cans full of used diapers from toddlers that have been recently vaccinated for measles. And so, you know, it's all over the place, and they try to blame it on the unvaccinated for spreading it. And we know darn well it came from, you know, recently vaccinated people. So. Anyway, yeah, so it's all sales. And even if we were to buy into this herd immunity thing, even if we were to buy into it, you're actually asking the population to commit human sacrifice. We're going to sacrifice a certain percentage of individuals. We're either going to cripple them for life or we're going to kill them so that the rest of you are more immune to diseases. And that's
a lottery.
Charade.
Yeah.
It's Russian
roulette. It's a lottery,
though,
because you just Russian roulette or lottery that no parent is quite sure is their child is being vaccinated, whether or not that child is going to suffer terribly and die in a few days or catch a terrible disease, be incapacitated for the rest of their life, have a lower IQ, their IQ down to the 40s or 50s or whatever. Terrible, terrible results from it. And what would you estimate the percentage is that hits a parent? A child of, is it like a tenth of 1% or something? I mean, do you have any figures
on that?
Oh, much
higher than that. I mean, saying, what are we at? We're at like, I don't know, somewhere between 1 in 65 and 1 in 20. Somewhere between there is how many actually get autism. So if they're, depends on the level of autism as to whether they'll ever actually be able to have a family of their own. So that's kind of like a soft kill. It's reducing the population that way. You know, whether they'll be able to live on their own or not, or the DTaP vaccine has a pretty high, it actually lists autism in the package insert. And you'll hear all this discussion about the MMR, but the DTaP actually lists it. And I did one of the articles I've got on the website, madscientist.exposed, and I go through the math, and they talk about, they don't say encephaly. You know, it's just swelling of the brain, which I believe is, I think that's the first symptom of autism, when you inject a child that scream this horrible, horrible scream for hours, and once the fever and the screaming passes, then they're autistic. And they list those symptoms in the package insert, and I did the math, and it was a pretty high number. It was like 1 in 20 that were either autistic or dead. And it's just
Suzanne,
beyond belief.
Why is the child screaming? Is it because of pain?
Yeah, the head,
the pain.
It's this unearthly scream is how it's described, and I've heard people describe it in some of these parents groups on Facebook. Describe this horrible, horrible scream, and then when the child finally stops screaming and the fever subsides, this is after one of the vaccines, they're not the same kid. They lose their communication and stop talking. Some woman, just yesterday on one of these groups, she had the child was talking in sentences, three-word sentences, and went in for vaccines in January and stopped talking entirely. Mm-hmm. And the child just said mama for the first time yesterday after this round of vaccines. And this woman was so happy. She was jumping for joy all over, you know, the Facebook group, parents group, because her child finally said mama again after all these months. And that child had been so advanced. And this was a wake-up call. I hope that child recovers as totally possible, you know, completely recovers. You never really know, I guess. But, you know, I had a gentleman on a couple of weeks ago on this show, Greg Wyatt, and you know, it's not I don't know. I just, as much as his story did not come out in that show as I would have liked, and he has since done another interview with somebody called Moretti Underground on YouTube, and I've placed a link to that interview. It's 2 hours and 17 minutes, and I've put that on the front page right now of Mad Scientist that Exposed. It's, you know, where I just links to the site and the things that we're talking about, and it's his interview, and it's mostly a podcast. You don't even have to watch it because it's a lot of it is a black screen, but you hear his story, and it's riveting, absolutely riveting, on how his family has been abused by the state since, I don't know, the 30s. His father came from a destitute home, and so the state came and they took him and put him in a home for feeble-minded children. Well, he wasn't feeble-minded. He was just from a poverty-stricken family. And they worked him like a slave, manual labor, for 12 years. And his family finally figured out where he was and managed to get him out. And
slave labor does take place in the United States, huh?
It did. And I said, all this garbage is coming out, and it's painful to watch. No, you know, people didn't know this was going on. Apparently, there were hundreds of these camps for feeble-minded children that ended up being slave labor, you know, all over the country. But nobody knew. They just called them insane asylums or whatever. But you know, they were saying it anyway. So the family did get him out. But the doctors in the state demanded that he be sterilized before they let him out, because after all, he's feeble-minded.
Oh.
Well, they had no way. They didn't know that. They were just assigning it to him. You know, it's just arrogance. You know, it's just pure arrogance. And that, and the story gets worse from there. It gets worse. It gets better. I mean, he married, and when they couldn't have children, they accepted artificial insemination. And then that it didn't work for a future sibling, so they adopted. But because he had this label from this asylum, they wouldn't let him adopt white babies, you know, because they were white. They didn't care what race the babies were, so they were happy to adopt, and they adopted Asian babies. And then it goes on. You know, Greg himself, he and his wife adopted children, and they were another race also. And, you know, just being a dad, you know, how old is his child now? I guess it was the late 90s. And both of his children are now vaccine injured, and they will not be able to function on their own. So there's that huge worry, what's going to happen to them? You know, because the way things ordinarily work is the parents outlive the children. But that's just a quick summary, but he goes into all the nuances and the mental state of different people at different stages of the story. Absolutely riveting interview. And, I'm kind of new to this radio thing. So, you know, but the host of that interview only, you know, he stayed out of it quite a bit. He just commented, you know, a couple of words here and there through the thing, and just let Greg tell a story, because this is the story of the state run amok. You know, apparently, you know, the Americans, you know, with all this idea about who's fit to live and who's not and all this stuff, you know, Hitler got it from us. The Nazis, you know, got it from us. Okay, we're going to sort out who's worth living and who's not,
eugenics.
And the work camps, the eugenics. Yeah, the eugenics. And these people, you know, apparently there's like Nazis born every generation, new ones, new people that want to run other people's lives and just lord it over them. Maybe I have a higher IQ than you do, so I know better how to run your life than you do. And so we have these New World Order elites at the top that are trying to mandate vaccines, and they've succeeded in about 3 states. And then there was this pending federal bill to mandate vaccines or you'd lose your health insurance. They tried to do that to the vets. You know, as bad as the VA is, they were going to mandate all vets get all vaccines. And so many of them have served as experiments for testing new vaccines. And we found out, you know, Gulf War syndrome was the anthrax vaccine they were all forced to take. And some of them succumbed to the vaccine with horrible diseases, and then some people survived it. And so there's a certain percentage of people that get horribly, horribly sick or die from any of these vaccines.
Wow.
And the anthrax one particularly bad. And you know, that's under, you can see that story on YouTube under, what is it called? Direct Order, I believe is the name of it. The Direct Order to take these vaccines. And that's what Gulf War syndrome was. And, you know, all of these, you know, they have this. I did the math too. If you go to the CDC website, because they have this new adult vaccine schedule too, and the goal is to impose it, or, you know, I don't know, if you refuse, what are they going to do to you? And, you know, take your health insurance away. Well, you know, a lot of good Obamacare is anyway. Or they'll it might come to the point where they want to send you to jail. Maybe they'll stick adult protective services on you. Maybe they'll stick, if you want to protect your children from vaccines, maybe they'll stick child protective services on you. You know, they can do it over a dog that you won't kill. They can make up, they can just call for any reason at any time for goons to come to your door and impose stuff. And so it's just, the state has run amok. It's been running amok since the 30s, but now the truth is coming out. And really, I believe that the internet was a gift from God so we can start cleaning this up. You can't, you have this idealistic picture of the past and how free everybody was and we won against the Nazis and all the Nazis did were pack their bags and move over here, the ones that escaped the Nuremberg trials. And I think they only tried, the top echelons, but everybody else, they packed their bags and they dispersed into the world. And it's not just the U.S., but, the U.N., in the EU, boy, I'm really hoping for the Brits to leave the EU at the end of this month. I'm really hoping for that because they're getting a lot of things imposed on them now that nobody voted for. It's some elitists over in Brussels, in the European Parliament, they call it, the European Union Parliament, which nobody votes for. These are just elitists from thousands of miles away, hundreds and hundreds, I don't know how far Brussels is really from the UK, but anyway, so I'm watching that with bated breath to see what happens, because I want it all to collapse. I want this house of cards to collapse, because the best way to defeat tyranny is decentralization of power. You take the power into your own hands to find out which minerals are you deficient in, so maybe you don't get those seizures or whatever your health ailments are, that you find out how to fix them. And sometimes you can't. If you've had damage done to you by these vaccines, I mean, there's all these detox diets, and maybe it'll help. But you want to avoid the damage in the first place rather than have to heal from it after the fact. And so you want to, vision into the – you want to look into the future. What is it that somebody can do to you? Because even if they're not stupid, there will be somebody malicious down the road. And I don't know if you heard that other story. When my daughter was in high school, she was having stress over homework. There was just too much homework. The teachers, they had shuffling teachers. And I was wondering if the college, I'm just still there. Anyway, they were shuffling teachers. Some teachers died. Some teachers went on maternity leave. And they were just dumping tons and tons and tons of homework on the kids rather than teach. And my daughter was stressing out about it, and so the principal suggested that we start down a line of counselors, and we got to this one counselor, and my daughter loved reading Stephen Hawking, and this one, actually, at the end of the line of counselors was this psychiatrist, and she went into that office, just bright-eyed kid, just loved science, and yes, she had been stressing over the volumes of homework that she was getting at that school, and she walked into a psychiatrist's office talking about the nature of reality. And you don't do that with a psychiatrist. She was speaking from the point of view of physics. She'd been reading Stephen Hawking, and she wanted to discuss physics and particles and light being waves versus particles. And, just a teenage kid that had just read a new book, and she was, just wanted to talk about it. And this psychiatrist comes out to me after the fact. She goes, I want to recommend this drug here. She's having a psychotic break. She doesn't know what reality is. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know what she's talking about. She's just read this book, and she's been talking about it all week. And I said, well, how about we – actually, it was Respiridol, I think was the name of it. And I went home and I looked up all these side effects. And it was, if you have a creative, intelligent child and you want to snuff it out, that's what you give them, Respiridol. And anyway, so I said to this doctor, I said, look – because she said, oh, it's very dangerous. She could have a psychotic break, by summer. And this was early spring. And I said, wait a minute. This is the same kid. She's been the same for years. She reads the book. She gets excited about it. She loves science. She loves the great minds. And, she puts up with schools, but she doesn't really believe in people grading her because she likes to just read what she wants to read. And, and we had spent some years homeschooling. So I admit she got that attitude from me. And, I was like, my kids are smart. I'm just going to give them all these books and books and books. And they read and read and read. And they actually argued over that Stephen Hawking book. It was A Brief History of Time. And I had to go get a second copy out of the library because they were arguing over it. Anyway, I said, look, Doc, if as you think that she's progressing down some road of horror, then in a month she's going to be worse than she is now. Is that true? And she says, yes, yes. I said, well, but if she's not, do you agree that she doesn't have what you thought and doesn't need that drug? And I was very confident in my proposition because I knew my kid, you know. Anyway, she, yes, I agree that if in a month she's just the same, then it's not progressing down the path I thought it was, and she won't be needing that drug. And so, indeed, she didn't need that drug. The doctor agreed she didn't need that drug. And but the principal of the school was going to have none of it. She was not going to have any of it. You know, my daughter was still stressing over homework and fine. But it really got to where the main point of stress was that this principal wanted her to take drugs. She has to take drugs in order to cope here. And it's like, okay, obviously by then I'm thinking, okay, we've got her in the wrong school. You know, and so we met at the, you know, in the principal's office. She had this big conference table. And we're sitting there and she's saying, well, you know, if your daughter had diabetes, you wouldn't be withholding medication. Withholding medication? I mean, I'm not withholding anything. The doctor said she didn't need it. But she repeated that term at least three times in that conversation. Well, you know, if she, you know, I don't know how we're going to deal with the stress, but if your daughter had diabetes, you wouldn't be withholding medication. Wait a minute, stop with the withholding medication. The doctor said she doesn't need medication. And so, after the third time, I knew, okay, we have to withdraw from this school. And that's what we did. Essentially, my daughter quit high school. And really, my goal was removing the influence of that principal from my daughter's life because she was lining up her ducks with phraseology of withholding medication because she was going to fill out paperwork and allege medical neglect. And I told her, and she had the documentation from the doctor that my daughter didn't need any medication, but she didn't care. She was going to deep six that and allege that my daughter needed medication. And you know, for a principal, no medical training to do that, I was just horrified. And the goal then was to remove this person from the influence of my daughter's life. And that's what we did. And she quit high school to go to college. You know, they had this program at that high school where you can take college classes that'll count towards your high school classes, you know, languages here and English there and, you know, history and science, whatever. But that school only offered Spanish, and my daughter wanted Japanese. And so my daughter wanted to go to the college and get the Japanese credits and have them apply towards her language requirement at the high school. Oh, no, you can't do Japanese because we only offer Spanish. And, like, oh, this is nuts, you know. But anyway, so she, essentially my daughter quit high school to go to college, and she took all the Japanese they had and got good grades, and it was, you know, great. And it was, you know, the local community college, but, you know, she was too young to be going away from home anyway. I saw where this woman was going. I had the foresight to figure out that she was lining up her ducks, that she was going to have some stormtroopers at our door also in order to force drug our child. And her father and I both agreed she did not need drugs. And you know, one of the few things we agreed on, that was one of them. We're not going to drug our kids, you know. Although we didn't know any better. We were much younger. It's a long time ago. We did vaccinate. We understand now that her brother had raging, raging eczema his entire childhood. He looked like a burn victim. And at least his face was pretty good, but, you know, his arms and elbows and legs, and I mean, he was covered. And his torso, he was covered. And that all started at exactly 6 months old. And I always wondered, what the heck about 6 months old that baby suddenly just kick in with this horrible skin ailment? Well, now we know it was vaccine damage. And so, you know, it's much subsided these days, but he still has his food sensitivities and things like that. That is all classic. Now we know it's classic vaccine damage. Anyway, that's kind of my point of the story, is to look where people are going with the way they're speaking. Look at their phraseology, you know, or you'll have goose steppers at your door. And you know, there's all these horrible, you know, I read these horror stories at medicalkidnapping.com. And they're very long stories on the path that they went down with this doctor and that doctor and that doctor and this doctor and this psychiatrist and this, all these different, you know, second opinion, non-second opinion, and they couldn't solve it, and they said it was this, and then it was that, and on and on. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not the choice I would have made at that point in the story. At that point in the story, I would have realized things are going downhill, do something else, and, you know, even if it's pack up and move. Before there's contact from the state, just, you know, you got to do what you got to do to protect your kids. And if you see things are going downhill, but, you know, people shouldn't have to live that defensively and that in fear. But it's for the sake of your children, you really should start using some kind of foresight. Now, what kind of damage can this person do to me? And how close am I willing to walk that line to, you know, get whatever it is I want from them, whether it's, you know, a high school graduation or not? You know, there was another incident where we changed schools for her brother because he was absolutely just getting depressed. He was in a GATE program, gifted and talented, and that level of homework was way too much too. It was for his age. I think, what was he, about 11 or 12, and it was just overwhelming. Because when you're in the GATE program, it's not just the advanced for the smart kids. GATE stands for gifted and talented. They realize you're highly creative also, and they take ownership of your creativity. And I didn't know that's what GATE meant. We just thought, they recognize he's talented. They're going to, give him, or they're not going to bore him with the boring stuff. And is there, going to let him advance? Well, no, they take ownership of your creativity, and they give you these really wacky creativity projects to do that are, They're just plain weird. But so the level of homework was way too far. And we ended up changing schools for him too. And because I didn't want any diagnosis. If you get a diagnosis, then the state expects you to, drug. Because that's what diagnosis means. You get a drug and you're on it for years and years. And if you can solve a problem, if your kid is struggling with something and you can solve it before there's a diagnosis, then that's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, you're the parent. That's your job to find out. And so, I don't know if they could have foreseen what was going on with the dog and the vet and all this stuff, because they had probably misstated what they meant to do. You know, if he has another seizure, if he has a seizure that won't stop, bring him in, we'll stop it. Well, you know, maybe they mean a drug. Maybe they mean just plain put the animal down, but they didn't say it. And so you have to be wily.
Sounds like that's what it was. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, you have to be wily. How can this person do me damage? Of course, when the dog first didn't respond, to her, what she was usually doing to bring him out of a seizure, that she thought she had no choice but to go in. And that's how they get you. They make you think you have no choice, And when they finally get in your face and demand, you have no choice. We will call the cops on you. Even though the dog's just home sleeping it off, and he's just, he'll wake up tomorrow and whatever.
Yeah. Suzanne?
Yeah.
Suzanne? Your story,
yes,
about the high school principal and the counselor.
Uh-huh.
No, not counselor, the psychiatrist, right? I think that psychiatrist was only doing half of her job. You know what? I think that she should have interviewed the principal. She should have interviewed the teachers. Why just the students? Obviously, the principal had some kind of problem.
She was already on the phone with the principal. That's what happens when you go to a school recommended. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it sounds to me like the principal had some issues. She probably needed to be on some medication herself, you see? I think the principal needed to be on some meds.
Yeah, well, she had this way of speaking. I don't know. You learn to recognize the style of speaking, where it's entirely CYO or CYA language. Everything she said, every word out of her mouth was 100% politically correct, and it was to set you up.
Yeah.
Whatever's going on, it's your blame and not mine. And it was all very legalese.
What does CYO stand for?
Cover your backside.
CYA. Oh, I see. Okay. Cover your backside. I gotcha.
Yeah. And that was her lingo. And so I was kind of onto that, I guess. And I was hearing this lining up her ducks, and everything that had to do with Teresa's stress was going to be none of her fault, none of the school's fault, nothing of this. It was going to be Teresa's fault and her parents' fault for not drugging her. Like,
this
is a school for us.
You think of possibly going to the school board and complaining about that principal? That the principal was not even listening to
the principal? Well, what happened was she was doing this to a lot of different people. I'm sorry to say, it was a Catholic high school in Tucson. And a lot of parents, there were issues with a lot of parents. And there was a big meeting where the parents actually met with the bishop and said, look, this is not working out. We have to have a different principal or we're leaving. And the bishop she was back the next year, and so it's like half the graduating class checked out. They went somewhere else. They didn't go to that school. You know, that, now, I'm really sorry to say that principal didn't last very long because she developed cancer, and she had to get out of teaching for a year, so she dealt with that. So she has since recovered, and she's principal. She's now back in the public school system where she belongs, because that kind of politically correct speech, that is actually where she belongs, in the public school system where everything is like in the state. And so you know, her brother went through that school after that point and graduated and did fine. And it just wasn't the right school for our daughter. But, you know, I couldn't say any of the public schools were good for her. So,
May I ask a certain question? I think it's important. You said that she kind of waltzed into the office of the school psychologist or something, a counselor, and talked about Stephen Hawking, you know, and different theories of reality and stuff like that. What was her reason?
It was a chain of counselors, none of whom could help her. And so when they couldn't help her with the stress of the – it was a chain of counselors actually at a medical place. And when they couldn't help her with the stress because they weren't licensed to prescribe anything, we ended up at a psychiatrist's office. And that's where she walked in talking about the nature of reality.
But that's what I'm wondering about is okay, so she's a very chatty, talkative, intelligent person. But she just didn't realize, like I say, this is a psychiatrist's office I'm going into. Anything I say could be used to me, you know?
Well, it wasn't just that. Psychiatrists, they're there to kind of help you deal with reality. Mm-hmm. They're there to, you know, if you're kind of like wacko, like, you know, Jared Loughner or somebody, if you're a wacko person that's totally out of touch with reality, they can identify that. And so... You know, I can see where they definitely have their place. If somebody is totally out of touch with reality, then somebody needs help. But in this case, she was talking about Stephen Hawking. She had just read A Brief History of Time, which talks about the nature of reality and in a physics sense. It's the context that makes all the difference.
She was sharing something. She was sharing something that she had learned with this professional person.
Let me give the number. We might have more people that want to join this conversation. The number to call in is 347-324-3704. And you know what? It's time for me to take another break, so I'll do that, and I'll give that number again. And it's 347-324-3704. And I'll be back in a couple of minutes here.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all in the Sabbath hour at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
There are reports that say sitting all day at work is just as unhealthy as smoking. There is a hot new health trend called earthing, where you leave your shoes at home and you go out for a walk in the park. However, most of us work all day. This is where Serenity Rug comes in. Serenity Rug is meant to let you feel the grass beneath your feet while you have to stay inside and get your work done. This revolutionary footrest encourages movement and blood flow so you can feel better while working. Relieves muscle tension, improves circulation at your own desk while you're working. Anyway, please check out SerenityRug.com. That's SerenityRug.com. Did you guys know that there's no such state in the United States that requires shoes to be worn while driving a car? Did you also know that there is no such health code requiring shoes to be worn while going into a store or eating in a restaurant? And the thing is that most people think there are laws in relation to this, and this is about freedom. This is about your personal freedoms on what you choose to wear or not wear in this case. So Sierra Larson hosts the Barefoot is Legal show, where you can learn about health benefits, laws that don't exist, as well as more activism in relation to this. And most people in the U.S. are brainwashed. They think there's a requirement to wear shoes to do anything outside. So the whole United States wears flip-flops because they want to not wear shoes, but they think it's against the law. So Sierra Larson will teach you more on that. The show is on Saturdays, Barefoot is Legal Radio. That's 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific. That's 1:30 to 3 Eastern, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hola, amigos. It is I, Jose. My sister Maria and I, we were trapped in a terrible third world country where we were tortilla farmers. We put the seeds in the ground and the tortillas never grew. So we decided to come to America. So I got a hold of my friend Chayo at Chayo's Coyote Services. He brought us not only to this country, but he did not rape Maria not even once. And he even gave me a cup of cool water. So if you are trapped in a third world country, please come to Chayo's Coyote Services.
Are you one of the tens of people who are tired of seeing chemtrails? Fed up with the government geoengineering you every other day? Take a dose of La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover daily and you'll never worry about weather modification again. With great ingredients and quality vitamins from Mexico and China, like fluoride, barium, high fructose corn syrup, and colloidal mercury, your brain will be a virtual etch-a-sketch lickety-split. La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover. Wow, I don't even remember the tagline for this, so it must be great.
Wow, some of these spoof ads I've never heard before. So I would have to be more careful in the future. Some of them, I don't know, I have a different style of humor from some of them. Anyway, so my main point of what I've been saying is when you're in contact with authority figures, what you really want to do is just be aware of the turns and, you know, just kind of be protective if you need to minimize contact with that authority figure, whether it's now that doctors are an agent of Obamacare, they're agents of the state, they're agents of the federal government. You know, they're asking you, do you have guns in the home? Are you depressed? In fact, a friend of mine had just a primary care checkup. Are you depressed? No, I'm not depressed. Do you have guns in the home? No, you know. But, you know, they really don't have the right to ask, but they do. And so you want to just be aware of your surroundings because there is an agenda, and the agenda is state control. The government now thinks that it owns you instead of working for you, and that's wrong. And I think that's why we see the election in meltdown, because we have to turn this around or it will progress to total tyranny, and that, because that's what tyranny does. And, oh, Ed, you're still there. Do you have anything
left to add? Yes, Suzanne. You know what? I went to a general practitioner for a health checkup. It was, I think, the first one I'd had in about 30 years. And it's funny you should say that, what you said, because
they asked me,
am I depressed, you know? And they asked me about three different times. They asked the person who was the nurse and then the doctor herself, are you depressed? You know? And then also I definitely had to answer the question, did I have any guns in the home? They were very concerned about those two matters. Was I possibly depressed? Are you sure you're not depressed? Are you sure you don't have any guns in the home? So something's going on there.
You're not licensed to diagnose depression. That's a medical diagnosis. You're not licensed to diagnose anybody, much less yourself.
I don't know if I have it. No, that's right. I certainly wouldn't know if I have it. Yeah, you're right.
and there are some nutrition issues that can deal with, if you're feeling down or whatever, there are some nutrition things. I love watching, you know, Googling stuff up and finding nutritional answers to things if something's bothering me, but you can't use a medical term like depression.
Right.
Like, okay, I don't feel so good. I need a nap, you know. Or, you know, find out, okay, what's a food that, you know, whatever helps your metabolism, helps you feel better. And there's niacin. If you go to YouTube and depression and niacin, there's a very interesting talk on that. There's probably more than one. And so I'm sure there's different reasons, but this a very interesting story comes of this woman that was catatonic and the niacin brought her out of it. And the doctor didn't like her coming out of it and recommended the family take her off the niacin. And so she went back into the catecholic state, and everybody but the woman was happy. You know, it's like, oh, man, you know, you have to decide. Do you want to live and do you want to live well? Or do you want to accept whatever they throw at you? And just deferential to authority figures, because authority figures don't know much. They are human beings. They do not outrank you. And if they think they do, you know, certainly they have their certificates, but it's your life and you make the decisions. And if you don't want to take a vaccine, then you just say, no, thank you. And, you know, don't even let them argue. Just, I've made my decision. Don't argue. So anyway, I'm going to have to wrap it up. I really apologize. We have only a few seconds left. And so thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be talking to you again next week.